Hi, this is the Watersheds at Work podcast brought to you by Tip of the Mint Watershed Council. My name is Corey Elenies, and I'll be your host. For those of you not familiar with the Watershed Council, we are a nonprofit group in northern Michigan dedicated to protecting our pristine waters through education, research, and prevention. For anyone interested in learning more, helping, or donating, please check out our website or give us a call. This is the second part of our three-part series on septic systems with Caroline. In this episode, Caroline will provide in-depth details on what happens in your septic systems, why it is important to have them checked, and what problems can occur for a lake if they are not properly managed. I hope you enjoy.
So it's pretty interesting. You know, there is a lot of heritage here with people that live on lakes, but there's no accounting for what kind of septic systems they may have had. And that is like definitely a concern everywhere. So there's like the older systems that are pretty serious concern. And then there's the fact that, you know, everything, let's say that's been put in the last 30 years or so, yes, we have records of it, but we don't know what kind of condition systems right. are in. What we do know is that most of those systems do have an end of life, basically. And yeah. I don't know exactly what it is, but I think it is right around 30 years. And that was the thing on Lake Charlevoix, is the majority of the people that answered our survey said that their systems were over 15 years old. So that's nearing, you know, where some of these people are halfway there. If half the lake is halfway to, you know, their systems are too old and they're going to start failing, that's a problem too. And so what's interesting about Michigan as a state is there is no statewide sanitary code. And so there's actually other regulations in other states that are better. And some of the examples, and the policy team could tell you more, but it will usually, it's something like a time of transfer ordinance, which says that if you sell your house, your septic system has to be inspected. And if there's anything wrong with it, there has to be corrective action. So right now, for most people, if they don't see any issues with their septic system, they're not going to do anything about it. I mean,
right. It's like extra money going down the drain.
It's, yeah, it's expensive. I mean, it's expensive to replace stuff. Yeah, literally going down the drain. Exactly. What was interesting on Lake Charlevoix, though, is a lot of people had really nice systems. They had multiple tanks, pump back system, or alarms. So there would be an alarm that said if your tank is like over full, they knew exactly where all their hookups were. Like, they were clearly very well maintained. And then there were other homes where the people weren't really sure where their system was, or you couldn't clearly see like a cap on the system where it had been pumped recently. Yeah. There might have been like trees growing around it. It was just like closer to the lake than other ones.
So with these septic systems, they can fill up or go past their max capacity and start leaking. What other ways can they leak?
Yeah, so a septic system, the idea is that there's a bunch of bacteria in there basically breaking down everything that's coming in, like from your toilet and the showers and dishwasher and stuff like that. But the bacteria can't break down everything. So what happens is there's like a layer of, I think it's just called sludge, in the bottom. And as more sludge accumulates in your tank, there's less room for those bacteria to do their thing. Okay. And so once those bacteria do their thing with the water that's in there, the water will go out into these tubes, which is your septic drain field. And that's why your soil has to filter at a certain rate. I believe it has to be slow, but not impermeable. Your soil will filter it out, and anything else that's in that water will basically be captured in the soil. And that water will continue on its way down into the groundwater or a lake or a stream. I mean, most of the time it's going to kind of take the path of least resistance. And so the idea is once that sludge accumulates, it leaves less and less room for the bacteria to do their thing. And then at the top of your tank, you're going to have more untreated wastewater. And so instead of the tanks slowly letting out a little bit of treated wastewater that's really clean, it's not clean. And so it will show up, and you can tell a leaky septic tank, well, there's leaky septic tanks and then malfunctioning. So leaky, sometimes there will be a smell outside, and that's because stuff hasn't been treated properly by the bacteria. Usually lawns will be bright green, so kind of the same indicator as algae in the water. Your lawn can actually look really amazing because it's got some really good nutrients going into it. It can be squishy, you know, there's too much water happening in there. And some of the signs from inside your home is your toilet can actually be backing up. Your drains can be backing up. It can be smelly inside your house. So from what I've heard, it can become a really serious issue like pretty quickly if things are not maintained. One lady told me, she said she hosted a wedding at her cabin on a lake, and she said she did not rent porta potties.
Oh, no.
And she regretted it because she had backing up toilets during a wedding reception because her system, who knows how old it was, if it was properly maintained, what kind of condition it was in. It's, you know, it's not necessarily easy to get those inspected. And then she probably had, let's say, 100 people using the bathroom.
Yeah.
And it's just like...
it's a nightmare.
Yeah. She told me, she's like, don't... She's like, I need to do a PSA about this.
Yeah, a story to vouch for.
Don't hold an event at your home if your septic tank is not ready.
So if you did notice
some of those things that you did have going on with your lawn, or notice that things were backing up, would there be anybody that you'd want to contact?
You would really want to contact a septic hauler first.
Okay.
So you want somebody that can really come pump out your system or inspect it. And a lot of septic haulers will do both. And it's literally usually the people, it's who you'd call if you needed to rent a porta potty. Like, that's their whole business.
Right.
So they're dealing with pumping out residential systems and delivering porta potties, dealing with all kinds of waste management. So they should most of the time be able to inspect your system, and they'll be able to tell you, hey, there's a problem with this. You've got roots growing in here. You know, I'm not really sure about the corrective actions. What I do know is what a lot of people don't think about is the waste from your septic tank, it has to go somewhere. We don't really think about, first of all, we're not thinking about where does it go after it leaves our house, like whatever, I don't care about my septic tank, right?
Yeah.
It's in the ground, it's fine. But then where does it go after that? And sometimes septic haulers will have an agreement with a wastewater treatment plant. They will empty their trucks at a wastewater treatment plant.
Okay.
Sometimes they will have a special permit where you can actually apply it on land. I mean, I'm pretty sure in Michigan you can't legally fertilize crops for human consumption with human poop.
Yeah.
But you can for animals, I think. So there's still like a more of a regulatory process after you would get your septic tank pumped, which means that you're getting all that sludge out of there, so there's more room, bacteria to do their thing. But that's an interesting thing too. There has to be a place for all this waste to either go or be treated in a larger facility that the water can enter back safely into our lakes and rivers.
Okay. I guess from the people with septic systems, from their standpoint, they just have to find someone who does the ground decontamination with that, or the water, and which one would be a better one, or do they both have pros and cons?
What do you mean a decontaminate? Like finding a septic hauler that would either do land application
or the water treatment?
I don't know. You probably know too much. I remember a few years ago, Granada Tomasi that worked here, she found out that if there was, I think it was a time of transfer ordinance, maybe in the county or in the state, that there was actually not enough land to apply all this septic tank sludge. If everybody got their tank pumped tomorrow, like where would all that go? There's not enough capacity.
Right.
There's not enough places on land to put it. There's not enough wastewater treatment plants. So it is a
it's kind of scary.
You know, finding out the problem is one thing. Correcting your own issues is another. But I think it has to be done in some kind of like rotation, where we don't overwhelm the systems and capacity that we already have.
And that could be either one or the other then.
And there's probably more places where it could go that I don't know of. And I can't really say which one is better. I just know that's two possibilities in this area, at least.
That makes sense.
So, yeah.
As far as ideal situations for lake associations, what would be the optimal rules that they could implement on a lake to help keep this all regulated and maybe have a balance? Is it doing those checkups every 30 years? In your experience, what does that look like?
There are general recommendations for actually just getting your tank pumped. And I don't know exactly what it is. I think it's like 3 to 5 years. So a lot of it's just keeping up on the maintenance of things. But I think something that no one's really approached is, what do we do with all these older homes
mm-hmm.
that are maybe passed down generation to generation? And from what I have learned from the health department, if somebody buys a small cabin and they want to turn it into a mansion, they have to go through a process where they get a new septic system. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Again, the question is, like, what about the places where that's not happening? And it's been there for 100 years. We're not really sure what's down there because your grandpa isn't around anymore. What does all that mean? And also, a lot of these septic tank records are not electronic.
They're okay.
Still on paper.
Yeah.
So I do feel like modernizing the system, the permits for each county and health department, and having somebody look through that and decide, here are some areas where we should tell people if they don't get their systems fixed, they're going to have problems. One of the things is if the health department can prove that your system is failing, which they have a series of criteria to say that it's failing, they can make you replace your system.
Okay.
They will make you do that, which, you know, a septic tank, it's underground, so you have to pay an excavator to dig it up. You probably have to pay for the materials, for all the different components. You have to pay somebody to install it. Then somebody's gonna bury that thing again. It's expensive, like tens of thousands of dollars. For me, if I was living on a lake, that would be a pretty big expense that I would want to avoid by maintaining it. Like, that would be my carrot. Like, well, if I don't get my oil change now every 3,000 miles or pump my tank every 3 to 5 years, I might have to buy a new motor or get a new septic tank in 20 or 30 years.
Okay, so that makes sense to try to have that education for the upkeep.
Yes, the upkeep is important, but I don't think that, like, I mean, there is a lot of education out there about old septic tanks, but there's not really a lot of incentive, I feel like, to replace a system unless it's having problems. And how do you know if it's having problems unless it's failing? And by the time it's failing and it's really gross and stinky and doesn't work and you can't flush the toilet, by that time, then you're going to be made to fix it.
So it's about educating about the preventatives.
Yeah. So another thing that's interesting is the state should soon, if they're not already, I think they have like $34 million in loans for people to replace their systems.
Okay.
And so you could apply for this, you'd have to get an inspection and you would apply for this loan and they would, you know, give you the money and it would be a low interest loan that you could hopefully pay off. But you're still, that's an extra $20,000 in a loan that you have to take out, which is a lot. The other question is, $34 million really enough money for, I don't know what the percentage is of septic tanks that we think need upgrades and replacement. Is that even enough money to help all the people that need to be helped? It's
yeah.
Probably not. Like, how many septic tanks does that $34 million really get us? And how many do we really need to be replaced to have clean water?
Yeah, at $20,000 a piece, it seems like it'd eat away at that pretty quickly.
Yes, I think so too. Yeah, lots of questions out there.
Yeah, thank you for answering all these. I'm learning so much about it. One other thing that comes to mind is that there's a lot of this, we've talked about a non-point source pollution. What is that?
Non-point source pollution, the best way that you can really explain it is you can't just point to it. You can't just know it's coming out of a certain pipe. First, I would say let's talk about point source pollution. So point source pollution would be like a factory with a discharge pipe. And maybe that discharge pipe is just water that they use to cool something else down in the factory. They have to get a permit for that discharge pipe that says how many gallons per minute and what can be in that water that they are allowed to put back into the environment. So that is a point source. You're just regulating that one factory. And so that's, I guess, an important note is there is a regulatory process to make sure that point sources are not harming the environment or the water, as long as they follow those permits, as long as those permits are good standards and everything. So something like agricultural or urban stormwater or fertilizer, how do you regulate an entire town or all the residents around an entire lake or a whole county of farms? And so that's really the problem is, first of all, you can't just point to it. I mean, if it's in a stream and the stream is 10 miles long, is the pollution coming in the first mile at the mouth?
Right.
Or is it coming from way upstream? That's why monitoring in a variety of locations is really important, because you can at least attribute everything that's happening upstream to a certain point. That's why mapping is really important, to be able to look at either aerial photography or data sets that show land cover, so that you can really guess, you know, there's more agriculture around this stream than there is that stream. So you can say it might be more likely that the pollution happening in the lake is coming from this stream instead of that stream. So it really is like narrowing things down. But you can go all the way to narrowing things down to an exact farm or a set of animals. I mean, there is technology out there, I think it's called E. coli source tracking, where you can track what kind of animal does the bacteria come from. You can test for pigs and cows and humans, and I think probably birds and probably dogs. And so that stuff often, you know, if it's a small enough area, you know that you only got one pig farm and one cow farm, that can help a little bit. But if you've got 100 houses, I feel like that was the part where you're just like, well, we can't really see what's happening. So all these septic tanks are underground. We don't know if they're failing. And you got to get on private property. Trying to maybe not regulate, but get people to potentially spend a lot of money is hard.
Yeah.
Asking a lot. I mean,
definitely. And it's like, if they can have it out of sight or out of mind, I'm sure that can be a preference. But that is nice to know, with all this information, what this can help people see that it's actually doing, instead of just feeling attacked.
That's why I think the education and communications in all of our work is really important, because we have to make sure that people know that they are responsible for their waters and they also can do the right thing. I think we really always have to provide education on, well, what are the options here? It's not that we're all just gonna move away from lakes or not have any way to treat our waste. It's that we have to do things like maintenance,
right,
and like maybe some inspections every once in a while. Like, there are things out there to make the stuff not so scary.
Thanks for joining us for the Watersheds at Work podcast. Be sure to check out our next episode on May 18th, where we will finish up the three-part series on septic systems with Caroline. This episode will be about the septic survey that was conducted on Lake Charlevoix. This will entail what the survey was based on, what all steps were taken to conduct it, and what they were looking for in particular. If you're interested in looking for ways to get involved, we have plenty of volunteer opportunities coming up in May, like stream monitoring, where you can help us collect data for reporting the health of our streams through Northwest Michigan. It is a fun way to get out and explore, as well as learn something new. To register or get more info, go to the events tab on our website. And if you're looking for more ways to get involved with us, check out our social media pages, become a volunteer, or make a donation to help keep our waters clean. And if you ever have any questions, please feel free to send us an email at info@watershedcouncil.org.